Hello and welcome to It's Not My Fault, the Yoshi Podcast is Not Popular, episode 139. My name is Justin.
And mine's Helen.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is a very special episode of the Yoshi Podcast because, well, it's the end of the year podcast, essentially. Although we're already in New Year, so first of all, happy New Year, Helen. Welcome to 2022.
We survived another year.
We did it. We all
take that all world.
Yes. Bring it on, 2022.
No, don't say that. We are not claiming this as our year. We're all going to walk in nice and respectful. We're not going to touch anything. We're going to look up our hands.
We got to fight 2022. What is this? What is this weakness? What is this?
Justin, this is how we've approached the last couple of years, and the plan has not worked. I think we need to change the plan.
Look. We approached 2020 with optimism. Then, obviously, the pandemic happened. Then we had our hopes up for 2021. And, well, we know what happened there.
So that this is why we're going to take a different approach. We're not going to think, okay, we've hit the bottom. We're going to be like, okay, we're going to take it a few steps at a time. We're going to be careful. And we're going to be prepared to run like fuck.
Oh, boy. And, anyways, so, yeah. In general, like, this time of the year, there's not too much major news. And, thankfully, Seven Seas had their big licensing thing wrapped up for the year a few weeks ago, so they didn't announce anything new. They will announce something this week. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, since they've got like those mysterious pre-orders up on sites, it's like new license L, new license K, new license P, or something like that.
Yes. So yeah, next time when we talk, which, well, it actually will be a bit of a while before we talk again.
Next episode's going to be so long.
But we will cover their announcements. It may be big enough, but we'll find out. But anyways, yes, because there's a lack of news in general, and because this is our bigger podcast, we just condense everything down. Pretty short episode, or, well, at least we get to the bigger sections, the fall stuff, and the weird news, all of the weird news that happened in 2021. But before we begin, I just do want to point out, try to stay safe in 2022. Obviously, the pandemic is still ongoing, and we'll probably still be talking about it by the time we record next time. So stay safe, and when you find opportunity, get the vaccination.
Yep, I am vaxxed, I am boosted, and I trust nobody. I am getting like the Zen 95s and not looking forward to going back in the office, frankly, or the metro. Mm. Strictly because there are fewer trains on the metro, which makes it harder to be in a socially distance.
Right.
Some people start getting kind of weird on the metro again about, like, not having people sit next to them. And it's like, man, this train is too full for this nonsense. But yeah, so the fall season, it ended up being a little smaller for me than I thought at first. I keep looking at it and thinking, did I forget to put something down? But no, I think I remembered to write everything down. Although, of course, as this always happens, a smaller season for me means it was a bigger season for you, so...
You know what's funny, though? For me, at least, there was a lot of stuff to watch in the fall, but I would honestly say, like, in terms of, like, oh, yeah, it's a lot of must-watches or anything, I wouldn't say it was a lot of must-watches, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, there was all... Like, the shows I'll talk about later on were pretty solid stuff, in terms of, like, all-time, like, classics. I wouldn't say, like, it's a must watch. Maybe aside from one thing, but it's still ongoing, so we'll have to talk about that a little later. But yeah, it was just a okay season. It was better in summer. It was better in summer, but I mean, in terms of more stuff to watch, probably better. But in terms of, like, content, like, actually, like, good stuff, I would say pretty eh. So, let's get onto it. And not surprisingly, I have my best order as usual.
Yeah, I didn't even touch your order. I was like, I don't know what this is doing here. I'm just gonna not touch anything.
Once again, I always go in order of when this particular thing airs. So that everything either has aired this season or continued from the summer, and that is how this order is. So wait, why does it have to start Mushoku Tensei Part 2? Well, this was a winter anime show that was supposed to air in the summer. But that got delayed due to the pandemic. Or, okay, they didn't specify it was because of COVID, but they said production issues. So that moved to fall. I think we talked about this through line where they actually had to delay production a week because they were trying to draw one character. They were fighting over one character, I think, to draw. I saw that on Twitter. That was funny. But aside from those production issues, it aired the season. It's over. No, it's not over. I think that show has gotten extremely popular over the course of the year. And that's despite this despite the lead. I guess this is what happens when you prepare enough for a show and decide you have a style you want it depict with its visuals, because it shows that it's one of the older isekai titles. It really shows in some areas. The only thing that separates it apart is all the characters have some sort of warts. Our main lead, Rudeus, we all know his warts. We all know that. Everybody else has their own warts. Not as bad as his, but they're there. But I think that and just how the worlds are depicted visually is one of the reasons why it's probably one of the more popular titles and one of the better shows that have aired this season. Based on how it ended, kind of ended kind of weird. I would say that. There's still lots of things that need to be resolved. But I'm expecting there's going to be another season. I'm expecting it.
Let's see. Most of the shows I watch, you also watch. I guess I'll start off with the one that I think... Well, one of the ones that I'm the only one watching, which is that I've put Digimon Ghost Game on hold for the moment. But as I reassure Justin before the start of this podcast, no, the show is not bad or anything. I just needed to prioritize watching other things in the meantime. Because it's very episodic. No super strong through line yet. I've gotten through, like... 10-ish episodes, so I'm a little behind, but yeah, I'm gonna pick that back up again. It's just the same fate as a lot of children's episodic cartoons I follow happen to fall into.
But like with Precure?
Yeah, like Precure, Gegege no Kitaro, yeah, stuff like that. We're recording this later than usual, so I can't talk, I can't think, I'm tired.
Well, sorry, Helen, sorry. Well, my next talk will be about the spring anime shows that aired and then went to that aired this fall, this past fall season. And excuse me, the first one I'll talk about is 86 Part 2. Unfortunately, this has had a tougher season than the first part. It was actually doing pretty well for a good couple weeks. Like, I got through, from what I can understand, Volume 2. Content, and it's pretty entertaining. And then it got to Volume 3, and what they showed wasn't terrible or anything like that, but guess what? It still had delays, supposedly production issues, and the final bit of a straw right here, they could not air the last two episodes because, well, they ran out of slots. they have no more time slots to air the show until March. Very curious, because apparently that's my dress up darling is taking over that slot, but according to the schedule, I think the next episode will be like for 86 Part 2 is March 12th and March 19th. Is dress up darling airing on those days? What's the story here?
I mean, Dress Up Darling is Cloverworks, so anything could happen when Cloverworks decides once again to have three anime airing in one season. Like,
yeah,
Cloverworks, they have a show airing. We're recording this on Sunday. I think it airs either Monday or Tuesday, and that's the one where, like, one of the... I don't know if he's one of the animators, producers, or whatever, but he's been posting on Twitter stuff like, lol, we don't even have an animation checker for this episode. We're fucked. So, I have to say, it's been interesting looking at the reviews and screenshots for 86, because I'm looking at it and I'm going, hey, wait a minute. I think y'all skipped a couple of important bits here in the novel. Like, okay, I guess they're continuing to reorder things. Since I remember when the first part aired, I actually had a friend private message me asking, hey, this is what it's doing. Did it do the same thing in the novel, just since its pacing feels a little weird? And I was like, no, okay, yeah, it's changed a couple things. But yeah, I'm looking at screenshots and I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
They were like, this order is not going to work for us. We need to reorder some stuff.
Yeah, like, I don't want to say what they've done so far, but I feel like they are depriving you of the maximum amount of suffering you could be having right now. And
I don't know about that.
I can tell you off the podcast my opinion of this. But while I am not a fan of 86, it is my understanding that people who are fans of 86 come there partially for the suffering. So I think they're doing you a dirty there.
Well, as far as I can tell, 86 fans that have been watching it have been loving it, from what I've seen.
I mean, you can love suffering. This is definitely a thing.
Fair enough.
Oh, and I know a lot of people have been enjoying this adaptation. I just have opinions as someone who has read the source material. What a novelty, Helen having opinions on a source material change.
But yeah, I think that for 86 part 2 at one point, I hadn't watched them like either 3 or 4 weeks, and probably one episode had aired from it. So yeah, there was some issues. So I only watched episode 9. There wasn't an episode that came after it, but I said, you know what? It wasn't quite a great place to end it with the enemy finally deciding, okay, I'm going to get that. Those guys, we get the 86
people. I have also been laughing at how they have chosen to animate like the main baddie for the second part. the visual representation of it.
with that design, right? I got you. but yeah, it wasn't quite a great stopping point for me in general. But I was like, okay, it's a fine point. Why don't I have to necessarily be worry about what happened in this episode just yet? So I stalled episode 9. I will definitely try to pick it back up in March to see it get to the it's gonna finally get to the volume 1 epilogue when it ends. It's
finally gonna do it. Justin, we're not telling people about that. That's one of the things they changed.
I mean, we all knew. Look, that's not even a spoiler. This is.
I think that is a spoiler for some folks, Justin. I think some folks are genuinely unaware of this. This is probably chatter I should have with you after the podcast, just to avoid tripping on some territories. But the difference between the end of the first novel, it gives you one impression, and then I saw people reacting to the end of the first half of the anime with a totally different impression. I was like, oh, is different when you take that some parts out.
No, from the very first time I got to episode 11 of the first season, there were already people talking about how it changed already.
Yeah, but again, this is something I want to talk about, but outside of the podcast, because I don't want to have to tell people to skip ahead 5 minutes for spoilers or something like that.
Fine. But all right, then I'll move on to the other spring to fall show. That'll be Let's Make a Mug season 2. Also with the voice actors still going around Tajimi and experiencing the culture there. Again, pretty solid show involving mugs. Although this obviously is more conclusive based on how it ended. Who knows if there'll be actually more of it. It's not sure. All I know is that these mug girls were nice. They were cool. And one of the voice actors, when they did the live action sets, they made a butt. They made the mugs. They actually made a mug that was a butt.
I think that's very amusing.
It is wild, but also, yes, very amusing. So, yeah, another solid season. Or not a solid season of Let's Make a Mug.
All right, so let's see. I think we're going to have you keep talking again in a second. I also ended up listing my stuff. Oh, wait, there is one more I watched that you didn't. I finished Ancient Girl's Frame, and you weren't missing anything by dropping it. So like we mentioned at the start of the season, it originally airs in Chinese, and then the Japanese dub would go up on Funimation about a week later. And the subs for the Chinese version were just awful.
Oh my god.
The voice acting sounded fine. And
I will say this. I had to get used to it. It was kind of a little jarring at first.
The Chinese-ness?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You see, I play Genshin Impact and I just play it with the Chinese voices on, so I've just gotten very used to just hearing Chinese voice acting over the past year. But yeah, I suspect these subtitles did not come from Funimation, since they did not read someone who was a native English speaker, and a couple of other titles I've seen of the Chinese ones have not also had great subtitles, so I think that's where the problem is. But if you waited a week for the Japanese dub to go up, then you would have a different subtrack, and those subtitles were actually readable, so that's what I ended up doing. No, you cannot just change it back and forth between the two, subtitle tracks. Trust me, I looked into it. It didn't work. But yeah, this show definitely felt like a whole bunch of people who were really new to the idea of making a show and had a lot of ideas and just did not spend enough time refining the plot, the characters. I usually won't knock a show if I see stuff off model, but I definitely saw enough stuff off model to be like, hey, wait a minute. Like, do you guys need animation checkers? I feel like I have probably seen a lot of what inspired the people to do this show, because there were definitely like some visual references where I was like, oh yeah, I recognize that. But yeah, this just felt like a whole bunch of folks who were pretty new to making a show and just needed more time in the oven. I'm probably going to forget about this show pretty soon afterwards. Although, it was weird. You get to, like, towards the end of the show, and it's heavily implied, if not outright stated, that the aliens are attacking Earth because Earth has developed, like, this new kind of energy technology. But it sounds like the way this actually works, since humans don't fully understand it, it sounds like the way it actually works is kind of like sucking energy out of another dimension, and the aliens are coming here being like, hey, no, knock this off. And at the end of the show, they just sort of yeet the aliens back into the other dimension, and they keep on going. They're like, yeah, I guess we'll need to keep experimenting and find other forms of energy, but, you know, it's going to take us a while, yeah. And I was like, well, that's a take to have in 2021 with, like, NFTs and China banning crypto and all that jazz. And I couldn't help but think about, you know, the whole thing of, like, China's banning crypto, China is trying to go more green, but they still have, like, more coal-fired power plants than anywhere else on Earth. And I was trying to figure out, you know, when am I reading too much into this, and when am I reading exactly what they want me to read into this, you know? But, I think I'm giving the show a lot more credit than it should. But still, the whole point at the end where it's like, the aliens very clearly told you to stop what you were doing because it's hurting them, and you just said nope. I was like, wow, that's... Normally you're not quite that amoral in stories, you know? Normally there's like some sort of like approach to being like, oh yeah, we should stop doing this, it's hurting the environment. But humanity and unlimited energy just... You know, we just cannot be trusted at those points, I guess. Anyway, like I said, you did not miss out by anything by dropping this early.
Yeah. Funny how that turned out to be the only thing I dropped this season. Funny. That is funny.
Well, was there anything else you felt like you should have dropped and regretted?
Yes, I'll get to that. Well, I'll get to that soon enough. But first, I got to finish up my other stuff that aired one season ago and went into this season. That would be Jahi, the Great Jahi, and Aquatope. The Great Jahi would not be defeated. Was colorful. Featured somebody who really just wanted to revive the Demon Realm. The Dark Realm did not do a good job of doing that. I will say there are some episodes where it's like, is anything going to happen? Is anything going to happen with Jahi and crew? The answer is no. Until the end, it got to the point where you have two demons basically towering over wherever their location is in the human world. But there were times it was funny, and times it looked bright and stuff like that. But otherwise, it was an okay show. It's not something I would say like I would actively recommend that you would watch. That said, if you read the manga, I think that actually showcases the series a little bit better. To be honest. Granted, I say this, I've only read the first volume of that series. The next volume of that is not coming till what? I think spring of 2022. So
is it a Square Enix title or something?
It is a Square Enix
title. Yeah, just since they've been really slow with their releases, I hope they can pick up soon.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough.
Give me more Apothecary Diaries.
They're one of the smaller companies technically, because they're kind of new in the market for manga.
Not that they didn't pillage like half the staff at Yen Press, it seems like.
Funny enough, there are still a few that do both. So I think it's only like one who like left Yen Press to go to Square Enix. Other than that, like I know one person who does work for Yen Press and also for Square Enix, so I don't think they've quite defected just yet. But yeah, they're not quite a big team, so it's not surprising that the pandemic is kind of, and the pandemic and the shipping issues that have plagued pretty much every publisher is impacting them, so not surprising. Aquatope is the one that I will lightly recommend. It's one of the few things that aired over the summer that people watch. But I think you have to have a certain pace. There has to be a certain pace you want it to be. For me, when I watched Aqua Soap, I kind of enjoyed its pace. The second half basically was what happened after the aquarium shut down. They had to go to Tingara. One funny note about Tingara. At some point in one of the episodes, like, it was like 12 or 15 episodes, they spelled it like with a Gara, with G-A-A-L-A. But then at one point, between like episode 17 going on, they spelled it Garla, with G-A-R-L-A. Crunchyroll, what happened here? What is it really called?
What happened is that the person on the Japanese end finally got back to them about, like, actually, no, we want it spelled like this.
It took you all this time. Come on, guys. Come on. But it was basically the transplants going from one aquarium to another aquarium. And for Kukuru, it was a lot tougher than usual because she was tied down to the original aquarium because of her parents. And those memories that she thought was lost there. So her going to Tingara and not even doing the attendant stuff, she's doing marketing. She got to do marketing. That wasn't her deal. So it was fun. It was interesting watching that. And then seeing how Fuka went from going from idol to working in an aquarium to now really just embracing just the aquarium life and all the environmental issues that potentially can come of it. That was interesting. There were only a few things I had misgivings for. Obviously, I think in the first half, it tried to use that nonsense about the fantasy elements of everything with the dolphins and the fish and the rest of the sea creatures. And it kind of died down in the second half. They kind of brought it back at the end, and I was like, I mean, you might as well just have dropped it entirely if you're going to do that. And I remember that the supposed guy that took Fuka's hat in the first episode doesn't really show up till like closer to the end of the season. And I'm like, come on, God. What is this? But honestly, I can't say. I can say I really did have a good time looking forward to it each and every week. That's like one of the few summer shows that I was like, yeah, PA works. Good job.
Let's see. Well, then, I also ordered my list roughly by what aired first in the week, you know. And so that meant on my list first up, we've got Irina, the Vampire Cosmonaut, light novels of which have been licensed now, so I might check those out. It's kind of weird since you've got the title of the show, and so you think it's going to be just entirely about Irina, who's this vampire in alternate Soviet Russia, becoming like this test pilot, but she actually gets to that like halfway through the show. Like, she has become a test pilot. She successfully goes on the test flight and does not die, and then there's still half the show to go, and it's like, okay then. I was this originally a one-shot novel and then somebody had an idea for like continuing it? I don't know, but after that it continues, and then follow the guy who's been training her, Lev, and he's once again an astronaut candidate. He was, and then he wasn't because he punched out his superior, and apparently even in Soviet Russia, that's bad. And so then he becomes a candidate again, and so then he's just going through the same training. And all the while, it's like, okay, so are they going to kill off your Irina? That's what they've been saying they're going to do. Are they actually going to do it? You know? Are they?
That's basically the burning question in the second half. Are they going to do it? And I do want to point out, she does, as we all know, as personally, She basically goes into space, but we're the only ones that technically know. The whole public at large has no idea of this. I think that's where it comes into maybe like later on in the series where she eventually becomes the vampire cosmonaut. Everybody knows it, although we do know kind of what happened toward the end.
Yeah, it was interesting. In like the last few minutes of the show, they show like this kind of, you know, and the story goes on moment, and they showed a couple of characters, and it's like, you didn't appear in the show at all, but you have very well-defined character designs, which makes me think you're probably important. And yes, it turns out that I think this anime covered like the first two light novels in the series, and then going beyond that, it moves over to the not America, not the UK entity, which also has vampires and is a bit more equitable socially. Like, vampires are already more integrated, so there's already some working on their space cosmonaut program. And so then it covers them, and I think that's the ones we saw in the last minutes of the last episode. So I'm kind of interested in reading the novels just to read more about them. And it sounds like the ending was pretty upbeat, and it sounds like the original novel's ending was less upbeat, which sounds kind of more like my jam. So I'm a little interested, but I don't know how interested I'm going to be once... Who got this one? Did Yen Press get this one?
Seven Seas.
Yeah, once Seven Seas starts putting it out, I don't know if I'll be interested enough to order it and then wait like 3 months for my order to get fulfilled.
All right, I'll be frank. We have a lot of shows that aired this season and I watched their endings of. And Irina probably had the worst ending out of all of them. I was... The upbeatness... The reality is it felt too unrealistic. The entire thing just felt too...
And we're not talking about the vampire part, folks. Like, we're just rolling with that.
Yeah, the vampire part, yes. Roll with that. We roll with that. I get that. But something about that whole last episode just did not work for me. Okay, the way it does kind of end at the last, what, 2-3 minutes was kind of sweet. And it doesn't really impact my opinion of the entire show in general. I was pretty invested in it. The relationship between Irina and Lev was pretty good to me. But like, yeah, the aside from just that, the ending was not very good. It was very bad. But I'm still interested to see how it was handled in the light novel, and also just in general how it ultimately ends in the light novel. Pretty solid show. I did enjoy just the fact that it does some stuff different than usual. There's just a lot to think about. Vampires, space, the setting. All that was really interesting to me. And while it wasn't like one of my top shows of the season, there's stuff in there where I'm like, I'm interested in seeing how the source material is like. All right, so now you gave your talk about what shows you happened to be watching this fall. So now I can finally talk about fall stuff, but of course I am not talking about all the fall stuff yet. I am moving on to shorts. Which is only two. I talked about Let's Make a Mug season 2 earlier, talking about the Gambare Doki-chan and Kaginaro, which these all started this fall. Gambare Doki-chan, I'm gonna miss it. It was just a simple, this office woman really loves this guy, but this guy's really shy, and they don't love each other, but there's obviously other people that get in their way, and yes, it gets very horny. Not quite as horny as Tawara on Monday, something like that show. Not quite like that, but it's interesting. I found the adult relationships in that and Doki-chan to be kind of interesting. It kind of ends with it could possibly continue, but if it doesn't come back up again, it's fine. It was a pretty solid show. Kaginaro, this is the every key. Character or show is in this work. So stuff like Little Busters, Canon, all that stuff, all in this one work. That was fun. I'm not sure I got every single reference, but when I get the Ugu, that's when I'm like, yes, okay, I remember that. I remember that. Just like 4 minutes every episode. Very funny. Pretty interesting just to see these characters from all these universes somehow in one building, one school building, I should point out. And I'm pleased that there is going to be more coming in the spring. And we'll see how they're going to integrate the Angel Beats characters in the season 2. So I'm curious to see how they're going to involve them in there.
Let's see, should I keep going?
Yes.
Yeah, just since your connection's a little bad, so I can't tell when you're pausing and when you've just dropped off the face of this earth.
I definitely paused.
Okay.
Definitely paused.
All right, so next one up was, let's see, Rumble Garandal, which we both watched. That one was okay. It's funny, it kind of feels like someone took a visual novel and decided to combine all three girls' romantic routes into, like, one storyline. That's kind of what it felt like. Since we've got our main character who's the pilot for this mech, and three girls who provide, like, the passion, the energy, the battery for it. And he gets to know one, and then she's kind of out of commission for a couple of days. So he gets to meet the next one, and then he meets the third one. So it just kind of felt like romantic routes in progression.
It's about the only real romantic, honestly, and thinking back, I'm not sure I really sensed.
Oh, no, he definitely went, like, the friendship route with two of the girls, and only the romance route with Ren, but.
Right. That was, a show, I will say that. But I was really, look, I was driven by just the references. If you throw in
you were there just for me, the comic
Yes, just for the Tokyopop random reference in a
I'm continuing anime, to be confused by that, by all the random Tokyopop manga volumes in the background.
Look, the established lore is this is happening when everything has been taken away from them. They've only got what they got, and somehow they have American stuff in there.
Yes, because that makes so much sense. Akihabara has been locked off from the world, and so the only manga you can get are the Americanized copies circa 2010. Although it's funny, like, one character reveals that they used to pilot the robot, or, you know, used to battery power it, and she has this outfit, and I swear to God, that outfit looks like something I would expect out of DramaCon from circa 2010.
Look at that. Somebody definitely was in America and it brought that to the show. It definitely happened.
It definitely felt like, I like anime, and so I'm going to make an anime-inspired design, and it's just like, no, this is just boring.
But yeah, it's an okay show. It's obviously a very particular show. It got me because of the references. I will say some of the stuff was neat. But in terms of will I remember this, I will probably just remember all of the references.
I definitely saw somebody summing up that the show is kind of average, but playing this robot in the next Super Robot Wars game is going to be really fun.
Okay, yeah, the robots are pretty neat. Especially, look, how can you go wrong with a Kotatsu robot?
I was going to say, the one where it is like flying around underneath a Kotatsu, that one is pretty good robot design.
You can't go wrong with that. But okay, at least to say I have, like, despite Rumble Grando being okay, I can at least say, you know what? I still had some stuff I liked about it. For the next two shows I'm talking about,
Sakugan? You're gonna say you didn't? Oh, wait, we're looking at a different part of the list, never mind.
You're going at the wrong, you have jumped the gun as per usual.
Look, I look for, like, what does Justin have written down after Rumble Grando? Sakugan, what?
But yeah, I mean, Pride of Orange was obviously going to be a show that was probably not going to be very good because it was a mixed media project. And the formatting is we have these girls that apparently are into hockey, but then are also going to be idols at the same time. Okay.
I was told that the premise for this is that they are all perfectly happy in their school's embroidery club.
Wait.
And they decide to try out hockey one day and then just totally switch to being a hockey club.
That is the issue. That is very much the issue. If you take the original premise of, okay, idol meets girl, idol plus idol girls meet hockey, okay, that's fine. The very first episode starts with our main characters doing embroidery. Does this embroidery come up later in the show? Not really, because the only time you really get to it is when they make the sign. They make a sign of with embroidery, okay, but that's so, like, on the side, so it's like, why would you even do this? Why couldn't you just, like, had an embroidery club that didn't involve them? They could have made it, like, have other girls make it. So it's like, okay, that's bad. But at the start, it's like, okay, there are still some stuff hockey related that are still accurate and stuff like that, but then the season goes on and they don't really talk much about the hockey. At one point they go to a beach, they have a beach episode. They're trying to explain that, okay, this is how we can get this character to show that passion when they eventually play hockey, and I'm like, you know. And then there's another episode where the coach, again, tries so desperately to mix idols and hockey at the same time. Doesn't always work. And, they basically speed run all the way to the finals. I think the first episode introduced them to playing in Japan and stuff like that. Not that. They go to the high school finals, like, really quickly. I'm like, okay, it's definitely not how sports anime usually goes. Sometimes it can be a detriment to sports anime, sometimes, but sometimes the training serves a purpose, and they basically just tried to skip all that. And in the end, you get a show that was never boring, but just never really made cohesive sense. And then it obviously gives you the ending of, oh, you got to play the game to get more of the story. And I'm like, I'm just letting you know, it's not here in America, so I can't play your game. I can't do that. So, yeah,
Justin
I can't really
refuses
say
to play your games, anime. He will not be swayed by this.
Well, yeah. Yeah, in general, I don't really... Like, Fire Emblem Heroes is just lucky. I love Fire Emblem so much that I would actually play it, but I really don't play phone games. I just don't.
And to be fair, Fire Emblem Heroes is also not, like, a mixed media project. That is its own game, its own story, and all that.
Fair. Yeah, that too. But yeah, that's not available. The pre-order is not available over here, so I can't play it anyways. And even if it was, I wouldn't play it anyways. And nothing this anime did really drove me to actually want to play it. So yeah, that's definitely something funny enough. If it ever continues, I might even think about watching it, but I will not be thinking about the show moving forward until that happens. Far Away Paladin, however, I will be thinking about, but more like, why couldn't I actually like the show? Something about this should have worked for me, but I can't say this actually did work for me. So I'm trying, was listening to other things. Why didn't this work for me? Is it the visuals? Is it the fact that they make the main character talk so much internally? Is it the fact that the way the main character talks internally is so annoying? Is it just the pacing? It's just baffling to me. But it was either episode 9 or episode 10. I was just really bored of watching it. Just really bored. And then also, this is one show that hasn't finished yet because of, obviously, the holiday season. They couldn't air their episode this past Saturday. So it's going to air tomorrow. And there's already going to be season 2. And I am not sure I'm going to see that season 2 because I just was not really a fan of how this was presented. This isn't going to stop me from checking out the novels. And who knows, maybe the novel... I'm going to pick up the hardcover version when it comes out in March. Maybe the novel might convince me to think about seeing it, checking it out again, but I don't think this worked out very well, personally.
Yeah, I've read the first 2 novels now. Hopefully I'll get a review of the second one up at some point. And I still have no intention of watching the anime because it just looks so boring by comparison. I think my greatest bit of entertainment was watching people online talk about the show, and I definitely saw one or two people who were like, why does Menel, the elf, look like that? Why couldn't he just be a girl? So I wouldn't feel bad about shipping them. And it's like, listen, folks, you gotta just give into it. The elves are just gonna look pretty, and you just need to accept that, you know, sometimes deep in your heart, you want to ship them with the other character, and you just need to stop caring about gender at that moment. Some people were getting really upset with themselves over this. I mean, yeah, it's like, oh, I see you were young to this.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing to, yeah, sorry. That's kind of, ship something else, I guess, ship something else.
I mean, listen, as somebody who, like, was there for Lord of the Rings, I am used to my elf boys looking pretty and the elf girls looking pretty, you know, just, you gotta live with it.
But yeah, those are my 2 shows of the fall season where I'm like, skip.
Rip. let's see. What else? Moving on, the next one I saw was Takt Opus Destiny, because I have been a forb. That is how you pronounce OP in music. It is Opus. Destiny was definitely not an Opus. Like, that, whatever music Takt was composing during the series is definitely not his Opus. I mean...
It's his masterpiece.
Technically, he's not dead at the end of the series, so he still could write more. I suppose if he dies, and that's the only thing he's ever written, that would be his masterpiece, but... This one was so weird. I still maintain that I don't know what they were doing with the first episode, since the first episode kind of sets up, like, one kind of dynamic amongst the characters, and then episode 2 jumps back to, how did we get here? And that kind of sets up, like, a bit of a different dynamic, and I just feel like they should have just cut episode 1 out entirely and done something else with that extra episode.
Look, they had They have to trick people, you know?
And, oh, yeah, this is another one where it's a mixed media project with a mobile game that got delayed and hasn't come out yet. It was funny because in like the last couple of episodes, I could see a couple of character designs and it's like, aha, I see you background characters who are girls from the mobile game. And then there was definitely a bit of a weird switcheroo in the last episode, which I didn't even catch, but some other people noticed a voice actor change and it was like, oh, this is what they're doing. So, that one was okay at times. It's remarkable how MAPPA continues to produce good-looking animation considering that studio is a flaming hot mess by this point.
Hey, we gotta get this right. It's MAPPA and Madhouse for this one.
Yeah, but MAPPA is still involved, so my point still stands. But yeah, I don't know, guys, it just sounds like bad planning if you need your, like, multimedia synergy and you can't get it to work. Just, yeah, I'm going to forget about this one pretty soon.
Well, I will say this. By far, and just so I can emphasize this, by far did Talk OP Destiny do its mixed media project better than Pride of Orange. By far. I'm just pointing it out there. Granted, it does probably help you have a good studio, which, well, obviously, aside from the overworking complaints and issues that they've
At least we don't have questions also, in here about why was there an embroidery club to start with, you know?
Yes. We don't have that. Yes. We don't have that. And yes, I was having MAPPA and Madhouse together was definitely a boon. So you can't really compare the situations, but by far, Talk OP Destiny at least was a competent anime. And personally, I was driven by whether or not the relationship between how the relationship between Top and Cosette would develop over the course of the season.
You mean Destiny, because that is definitely like an alien piloting Cosette's dead body, like this entire show.
Yes,
that, and we were just discussing it.
My vain hope was something along the lines of maybe Cosette could come back. Very idealistic, right? Very idealistic, right? But obviously the show didn't go that route. It probably doesn't make any sense story-wise, because obviously we saw she died.
And it makes sense that the characters are not discussing it, because they're obviously kind of fucking traumatized by this, but...
Yes, yeah.
I felt like they didn't want even the viewers to think about that too much.
But yeah, aside from just the fact that visually it looks pretty good, and then I did kind of like the New York episode. Welcome to my city. They actually have a very good-looking Whole Foods stand-in.
Welcome to my city. We are about to be destroyed because that is the fate of New York and all forms of mixed media.
Incredible. But yeah, I think the story takes a bit of too many well turns. And I think somebody tried to compare this to Guilty Crown. And you know what?
It's way more competent than Guilty Crown. It's got way less incest than Guilty Crown.
I will also say it helps. It doesn't go more than 12 or 13 episodes like Guilty Crown did. Maybe if Guilty Crown ended in like 12 or 13 episodes.
Listen, no, it already had incest going by that point. Like, that show was messed up. I remember incest. It's funny because I follow some friends on Twitter who are watching it for the first time. I don't know why. They just are. And they've gotten like halfway through and everyone's like, oh yeah, here's when it gets really wild. And I had dropped it halfway through, so I had to go looking up what happened for the second half of Guilty Crown. And I was like, okay, yes. This is apparently even wilder than what it was when I left off. Amazing.
Wow. But yeah, I won't quite say like Talk OP Destiny wasted my time. Like, I was still very entertained by some stuff. But if you ask me, I will probably only remember very few things from the show.
I might remember that opening. That was a pretty good opening song.
Oh, yeah. Opening song's pretty good. That is true.
The ending theme was a little lackluster by comparison, but, you know, you can't win them all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think I should be up next. So we'll talk about Sakugan.
Which was hopefully not one of your worst shows of the season.
It's something I'll definitely just remember for the father and daughter. Memempru and Gagumba was definitely a standout.
I'm still not even sure if it's getting a second half or not, because, like... That ending card could be read multiple ways in English.
I think they even at the end of the last episode, it said to be continued, and it had the not.
Yeah, it says to be continued, and then like part of the ending card always says end, and they covered up the end with not, and so it's like end not, or is it to be continued not? It's
like, yeah. I don't know. Just like across the board,
they haven't announced anything yet. So
yeah. the thing is, honestly, across the board, like, if you check, like, it's not a, obviously, it's not an exact science, because obviously, if it does well in Japan, that's all that matters. But across the board, like, you check, like, most sites, it did not rate well in any way.
And you say that, but that, this show felt like it was, it felt like it would appeal to the Toonami audience, you know?
Right, yeah. It should, it should. Like, it has elements that should work. Robots, deep underground, two characters that are really, like, they really stand out to me just because of how they're personally like. But I don't know. I feel like the one thing that ends up happening is it has an idea of what these characters, what they want, the big goal. They want to, Memempu wants to go, she's looking for a specific location. She wants to go to a specific location. But it takes so long to try to get there, and by the end, they don't really get there. So yeah, I think they probably stalled a little too much, honestly.
Yeah, if I knew for sure that the show was going to be, you know, two core in, you know, split, continuous, whatever, then I think I would have a more positive feeling of it. Because then we could look at this first half as, you know, establishing our main quartet, you know, establishing, you know, the world, since we, the viewers, can recognize, oh, the characters are underground, but they don't actually quite realize that this is underground. It's kind of a City of Ember situation there. So that makes it kind of an interesting dynamic right there. And I felt like if we knew more was coming, this first half would be perfectly fine. And also establishing, you know, we've got like a couple of organizations out there who want to disrupt this piece. You know, there's definitely secrets going on behind the scenes, yada, yada, yada. But the way it ends, it's like, okay, confirmation, Memempu is actually kind of special. We're still not entirely sure how, but she definitely is. There's anarchists, and yeah, maybe they'll fuck up the world. Maybe they won't. We don't know at this point.
I will say, if nothing else, I am glad they didn't try to leave that mysterious about Memempu and Gagumba's actual relationship between each other.
I am a little sad. I was predicting that Memempu would be a robot, and I was wrong there.
Okay, well, in a way...
Then she's just a genetically modified organism.
Yeah, you're not complete. You're just on the... You're on the track of... Okay, she's not definitely a human. That is definitely for sure.
Yeah, because there was, like, one or two shots in the show where it was, like, something happens to her that should kill her, and she's totally fine. And I was like, okay, show, I see your very obvious foreshadowing. I'm taking notice. Okay, okay, yes. We can move on now.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll there's all these
interesting plot threads in there, like, Gagumbar used to have a partner, but his partner, it seems like they had an argument. Gagumbar walked away from the camp, and when he came back, it was like in disarray with the partner missing and blood. And so everybody's assuming he's dead. Who knows if he is or isn't going to be dead. And another character's like, yeah, you guys were talking about going to this place. And Gagumbar's like, I have absolutely no memory of this. Why would I have been saying that? So there's all these little interesting hooks in there, but, you know, I've just seen, you know, too many original projects not finished that it makes me nervous. I mean, part of this is just that I read webcomics, so I'm just used to shit never finishing.
From what I understand, I feel like I read something about Sakugan. This is actually based on a novel series.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that. Yeah, it is actually based off a novel. I only found this out, like, the other day, so I keep forgetting that. But, well, it's not like we have the novel license over here either to read, is it?
Yeah, we don't. We do not.
Got to go put that in that big 7C survey they just sent out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anybody's going to want to read the novel. I'm not sure. But yeah, it has a lot of things hanging, and I would definitely be down for another season of it if it ever happens. But how it ended wasn't too bad for everything I decided to leave off. I will say that.
It got the characters to a good point, but then it left like all the plot threads loose.
Yes, most.
So if you're a character person, you're happy. Yeah. If you're like me and I'm more of a plot person, you're kind of going,
Okay, well, I would say this. I get that. I do understand. But for most, like, for some anime, you just have plot threads totally unresolved. It just feels awkward. I will say for the last episode of Sakugan, I could say, like, I didn't feel awkward, despite the fact that I left a lot of things on the table.
Yeah, I guess, but... Yeah, I just really want another season, you know? And I did end up enjoying this show, too. I just ended up, like, enjoying the world they were exploring, you know, all of the unresolved questions. I actually ended up genuinely enjoying a lot of that, so of course I want more. Okay, so is it my turn? Mm-hmm. All right, so Heike's story, which you have on hold. I'm guessing you just haven't had time to finish it, or is this a soft drop for you?
It is on hold. I was hoping to get to it over the course of the fall, which I never did. So hopefully the plan will be to get to that over the winter season.
How much did you see then? Any?
Up to episode four.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen a whole bunch of people saying, oh yeah, this is, you know, an adaptation of a really long, originally an oral tradition, now a novel. You know, it's this adaptation of something super long. You can't quite get it, you know, if you haven't read the original, yada, yada, yada. You know, Japanese school children learn all of this, so the average anime viewer will go in knowing all this. And it's like, listen, I don't know anything about this original story, and I followed it perfectly fine. It is the tale of the intrigue and fall of a specific family, because sometimes your family just gets in over the head and everybody gets slaughtered for it. That is just sometimes how it works in history. It has obviously had to cut some stuff out. We've got a new point of view character, which I think works since the original point of view character, Toko, is still present in the story. But by creating Biwa, they're able to have her in places that Toko wasn't. And they were able to tell that fine. I thought it worked really well. I loved the animation. I did crack up when I was seeing some people online saying they were having trouble telling the characters apart a little bit, since a lot of the designs are very similar. And I was like, oh, this is kind of what it feels like to be partially faceblind, where you can look at a character and say, I know this character doesn't look exactly the same as somebody else, but if they're not next to each other, I can't articulate what makes the two of them look differently. It's like, yes, that's exactly how I feel in real life. And so for me, it wasn't an issue, since I just automatically kicked into, like, all of my compensating traits of, you know, checking hair, checking voice, you know, if nothing else, remembering, okay, this is uncle to so-and-so. So that was just very funny for me on a personal level. But yeah, this is definitely one of my top shows of the year. I've been having to think about that since I'm going to be on the Taiku Podcast's Top 5 Anime of the Year episode soon. And this one's definitely up there, since it felt like a nice, complete story with thought put into every shot. It seemed like nice color work, just a really fulfilling story in some ways. I felt sated finishing it. Yeah, I was happy with this one.
All right, Helen, finally time to go into good stuff for me this season. The stuff that was like, okay, I'm actually looking forward to this almost every week, or I would actually recommend most of these for anybody else to watch. I'm going to lump these two together, Call Me Can't Communicate and Blue Period, mostly because they're both on Netflix.
Yeah, I did not watch any of Call Me Can't Communicate, but I did read the first novel for, not novel, first manga volume for Manga in Your Ears, and I was only meh on it.
Look, she can't communicate. What's the problem?
This child needs a individualized personal education plan.
but yeah, both of these shows technically finished in Japan, but because it's on Netflix, it's obviously not done yet.
Blue Period is done. I did finish that one today.
No. Episode 12?
Yeah.
It actually aired episode 12?
Okay. I can assure you, I definitely watched it while at the gym today.
Okay, so that's finished. So the only thing left is Komi Can't Communicate. All right. So that ended today. Komi Can't Communicate has one more episode left. Well, for this season, this is getting, Komi Can't Communicate is getting a season 2. Well, I would probably know it as a more of a part 2, since it's coming back in the spring. But yeah, both of those I felt were pretty solid shows. Visually for Komi Can't Communicate, that I feel like that's a bigger standout than some of the comedic elements. I think it kind of like just looks better than most of the shows airing, unfortunately, that aired this fall season. Some of the characters were pretty good. Episode 4, we're going to all forget ever existed. That will say that, though. We'll say that. But otherwise, it really just gets into communication and just some of the, obviously, difficulties. And while it still has a humorous tone, I don't think it does it in a way that's insulting or rude or anything like that. I think it does it in a way that makes sense. So that's one thing I feel like that's a show I would recommend to anybody to watch. And I should point out, there were obviously concerns about the subs for Komi Can't Communicate. So I think if you're looking to see some of the other stuff that gets translated. I don't know. The show will probably not be for you. Like, they have some asides that eventually gets... They get that the characters eventually say, but it doesn't get trans... The boxes, the boxes of text, they don't really get translated. So I don't know. That's going to be an issue. Maybe this might not work for you, but overall, I would say can't communicate is fine. I know you, for Blue Period, you weren't very pleased too much with how the anime adapted the manga. And, I mean, I had some issues with Blue Period 2. But, I mean, I feel like it depicts most of the story of everybody for... I think it depicts it pretty well, generally speaking. Like, when I watched episode 10, that was a pretty good episode. That was really good. I can't say, obviously, for the last couple episodes, I haven't watched those yet. Hopefully, I'll get to that this week. But, in terms of, like, quality anime, I feel like it's definitely one of the sharper ones of the fall season.
Yeah, the Blue Period is one of those where, since I watched the manga first... Well, read the manga first.
I don't think you can watch manga. Don't think you can do that. Well, unless you watch, what was it,
I mean, sometimes they put, like, those animated chapters up on YouTube, but, no, I read the manga, I did not watch it.
Look, you could just, I think, what, people were
talking about... Oh, wait, the house husband. Yeah, you're right. I did forget about that, but...
You could do that. Watch that. It's a manga.
But anyway, that just... I just really preferred the way the manga did stuff to the anime. The anime felt a little too quick in some ways. Or even, so when Yatora, our lead, is just starting out at, like, the art prep school, there's, of course, you know, a couple of instances where he and his classmates are all drawing and then they're all putting them up for critique. And there's one character, Yotsuke, who he's really taken in by his art. And that scene occurs in both the anime and the manga. But there's a second scene in the manga, which didn't make it into the anime, where the characters have then been tasked to draw something else. I think just like a more generic still life. And Yatora is looking around for Yotsuke's artwork, because he's sure that's going to be astounding as well. But when it's pointed out to him, he realizes it's just this very average, boring piece. It has none of the energy of his previous work. And in the anime, it kind of feels like... God, I'm going to get these names mixed up now. Yatsuke is kind of like this genius, and that's why Yatora is so enamored with him. But in the manga, you get more of a sense of he may be skilled and have just sort of like conceptual abilities a level or two above like his similarly aged peers, but he's still very much an amateur artist. He's still very much a beginner. When he has to draw something he doesn't like, he just won't draw it. He leaves the entire art prep school because of that. You know, if he's forced to draw something he doesn't like, he's not necessarily going to do it well. He doesn't apply his skills evenly, and that matches up really well with his personality, which is just very prickly, to put it politely, overall. And I guess the anime must have just cut that for time, but I noticed that scene was missing. And the anime... it's like the first four, maybe four and a half episodes cover the first two manga volumes. It goes that quick. So anything beyond that, I haven't read the manga for. But I kept wondering, are there more scenes like that that got cut? You know, ones that are kind of important establishing character moments that really leave you with an incomplete view of them otherwise. And I'll also admit, by the last couple of episodes, I was feeling a bit annoyed with Yatora. Possibly not for good reasons, but like he's doing an exam... And he's breaking out in stress hives, you know, and he's got, like,
that man is eye strain. His arm, like, geez.
Like, eye strain, maybe a migraine or something. And it's like, yo, dude, I have had all of these things before. You got to just learn to recognize this stuff when it comes on. And you got to get the calamine lotion on your arms and just not think about it. You need to get, like, you need to stop wearing contacts. You got to wear your glasses. You got to take the good painkillers for your head. You got to get a lot of sleep. You know, in just some ways, it was kind of like... Tough it out, guy. I was toughing this out when I was your age, you know? And without painkillers, too, for most of it. You know, just... I think I am being rather harsh on him at those moments, but I was having these moments of like, it's like, somebody please tell this boy... Somebody please tell this boy about the magic of, like, soothing aloes you can put on your skin when you're having the stress hives so that you don't feel the need to scratch as much. believe me, I have done it. I have had times and I've had the stress hives, and you just very casually walk into the work bathroom, hope no one's noticing you're carrying an entire pink, bright pink bottle with you, you know, to put more on your arms, you know, you just, sometimes that's just life. Stress hives suck. Stress is such a weird thing on your body. But yeah, I definitely want to get back to reading the manga. I'm definitely interested in reading more of it. I finally got to my library for the first time since this pandemic started, and it doesn't look like they've gotten a lot of new manga over the past couple of years, so we'll have to see when I'm able to read Volume 3 and beyond.
Blue Period?
Yeah.
Are we sure? Oh, you just want the print copies?
I mean, I'll read print or digital. It's just, it is not in the Comixology account.
Oh, yeah, I think, not yet. Gotcha. All right.
I mean, it came out a while ago, so if it was going to be in there, it would have been in there.
It got, yeah. All right.
Although this is the person who... It took me a year to notice that Starcrossed Volume 2 was in there, so...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I told you at one point, too.
Listen, I read it the other night. I'm probably not going to review because it's been too long now, but I read it the other night, and that was a lot of fun. This show should get... That manga should get an anime. It's good, it's fun body switching.
If you could do Endo and Kobayashi, you could totally do Starcrossed.
I'm still surprised that one's getting an anime. Happy, but surprised.
I am too. Okay, I think it's your turn.
Okay. So, I've already covered the Netflix shows. Let's see. I think the only other thing that I watched this season was Taisho Otome Fairy Tale, which I've dropped with 3 episodes to go. So,
pick it back up with the earthquake. Pick it back up. They got an earthquake coming.
Yeah, I know, Justin. I am aware of historical events in the Taisho era.
Pick it back up.
No.
You must see how it ends with Tamahiko and Yuzuki.
I mean, look.
You must know.
I watched 9 episodes, but at least 4 of them have just been on in the background while I've been doing sewing. Like, on my sewing machine. Like, both to the point where it's just not that gripping, and also the dialogue is so bog standard that I am able to just listen and pick up like 50% of it, and I have not studied Japanese in years. This one just drags its feet a little too much for me. Like, I don't even know exactly what I want more of, but including more girls to possibly hit on the guy was not the answer. I don't know, this one was just lacking something for me. Just lacking something that made the characters feel more real for me to get invested in.
Like, Yuzuki's caring of the disabled Tamahiko was a little too weird, or...?
No, I mean, yeah, the situation where...
Not enough, where she was basically
sold to be his wife to pay off his family's debt. Yeah, that's kind of awkward, but that's not a deal-breaker for me.
Yeah, and funny enough, they decide to finally reveal Yuzuki's, reasons for accepting it in the last episode.
Well, I'm assuming it was because she thought it was one of the better options she had at the moment.
That is one of the reasons, yes. But okay, yeah, it's fine, we disagree.
Keep talking, Justin, convince me.
No, I probably won't convince you, because you say you're not sure what is lacking, but everything it did between the character dynamics between Tamahiko and Yuzuki, just the fact that Tamahiko's finally starting to love some of his family, like, he started to realize, okay,
Tamahiko... I mean, to be fair, some of his family seemed pretty shitty, you know, that I could understand not...
Oh, yeah, especially his father. There was one moment in that, I think it was either second to last episode or the last episode, where he doesn't actually quite acknowledge him, but he still, despite, because of the situation of the earthquake, he still doesn't want to think less of him. He still wants to show him that, yes, I am moving on without you. And I thought that was a really nice, it was small, but it was a nicer moment, and one of more chilling or relaxing. There are some episodes where they try to leave cliffhangers involving the two, and I'm like, okay, but what about this annoying girl with her history, with her past? Okay. But otherwise, it was mostly just a chill and see these two characters basically get to know each other and love each other, even despite the circumstances and even despite the era this is in. I was surprised I actually liked it as much as I did, honestly. Funny enough, I was trying to see, like, could there actually be, like, more seasons of this? And the answer is probably no, because this finished a while ago in Jump Square. It was only a 5-volume series. There was, I think, either a sequel or like a spinoff. Either one or two of those of the series. But I know one of them is at the end too. So this is probably going to likely be it. So for what it was, I was surprised I liked it as much as I did. I think it's definitely one of the more entertaining romantic shows of the season for me. Also, I did kind of like I kind of wish Tamako didn't go out to be a doctor. She was kind of a neat character, honestly. So, all right. That means the rest of the shows I have to talk about. So I'll try to go kind of quickly so we can get to the most interesting weird news section of 2021. So Restaurant to Another World Season 2. That aired. We got more food porn. The food porn was good. All these characters getting isekai to eating really good hamburg steak or enjoying what does one of the characters enjoy? One of those chocolate desserts, something like that. That was very quaint. Visually, it was interesting because obviously this moved to a new studio and stuff like that. I think it was OLM. OLM is did this season, this past season, and. Very interested how...
Wait, isn't OLM the ones that do Pokemon?
I think so. I can't remember off the top of my head. Possibly. But yeah, they really did the season 2 of Restaurants from Another World. It wasn't the same studio who did season 1. So yeah, visually it pops, I think, a little bit more than season 1. And just in general, it's nothing like ambitious or anything like that. You just got one master... They still haven't revealed this guy's name yet. He's apparently the best chef ever. He can't seem to mess up anything. But he's able to comfort like lots of people with his food. And I managed to enjoy that again. I don't know how far it is in the compared to the social tale, but I do know there was a recent volume that got released for that. But whatever case, it's going to be a while before we see another... If there is another restaurant in another world, to another world, it's going to be a while. My Senpai is Annoying was something I was kind of ambivalent about because I read the first volume of the manga and it was okay. It wasn't anything like spectacular or something like that. But I was like, okay, because there's going to be anime, I'm like, okay, I'm fine watching this. It's totally fine. And personally, the main relationship, obviously, small Futaba with her senpai, Takeda, was okay. The best relationship was between the side B characters. And I didn't even note that when I wrote the review. Like Sota and Togo, those are that relationship between the chemistry between those two was awesome. That was great. Like every time they interacted, made so much sense to me. The visuals were pretty good. Some of the comedy was okay. There were some where I was generally laughing out loud because of just some of the interpretations. And like one episode, Futaba's grandpa shows up and obviously wonders, who is this? Who's this Takeda? Why is he with you? Classic grandfather worried about her lovely daughter stuff. And
man, my grandfather, he would just tell people to like go climb trees, you know?
Well, first of all, this grandpa is somehow really buff. he's supposed to be old, but he's very buff. Like he goes fishing and stuff like that. This guy's on a motorbike.
Yeah, no, my grandfather, he would be, like, cleaning the gun and be like, go climb that tree out there. The tree wouldn't have any branches for, like, 30 feet.
He also saw the fictional inverse version of Your Name. You're not going to know if grandpa's going to do that, right? You will not know any grandpa that does that.
I mean, mine's dead, so we can't do that.
But yeah, My Senpai is Annoying was really good. I was very much enjoying that. As it turned out, though, because of everything, out of everything I did watch this fall season, and this didn't actually surprise me, Miracle-chan was my favorite of the fall season. It takes, I guess, what, 3 elements, technically? It's hard to call it slice of life. It's just that the problem is, everything around Miko is technically slice of life. Nobody can actually see not a lot of people can actually see the spirits or the ghosts, except she can. So everything about them was like, oh, everything's great. It's a slice of life. What's happening? But for Miko, it's all horror. She sees these things. She's not sure how she sees them. She doesn't care to find out why she's seeing them. slowly she does towards like the climax, like the latter episodes, where she starts thinking, oh, maybe I can actually use this for a service of good. Like there's one episode where there's this weird, strange dude who once wanted the cats, and there's another dude who looks like a gangster and definitely doesn't seem like he'd be a cat person, but she determines the guy that looks like literally like evil incarnate with all the cats surrounding his body, like these dead cats all surrounding him. No cat. Gonna give it to the Yakuza guy. And that Yakuza is actually a really good guy. So the whole series basically goes into, you can't always judge what you see. So it goes into that theme really well. So you got the horror, you got the comedy. Like, okay, the comedy can be kind of rough, mostly because like you're basically laughing at the fact that she thinks things are going to be going well, and then they obviously don't. But I find some of the humor works for me. The only misgiving is the fact that it kind of follows the webcomic element to this. So the manga for Miracle-chan was originally started like on Pixiv and stuff like that, like a webcomic. So it had like the fan service elements in there, and it obviously continued in the anime, but it also upped it a little bit in certain episodes where it wasn't really present in the manga, in later episodes and later volumes. So that was unfortunately the only like negative thing. But honestly, I feel like it adapted the manga really well. Like this is one of the better manga to anime adaptions that have occurred personally. And then we have my last show, which if it keeps up what it's doing, Ranking of Kings will probably be my first, like, yes, legendary favorite anime up there with what I got, Bunny Drop. What else do I got up there? Tokyo Godfathers as like one work I'll definitely remember, because I really love it. The characters, I cannot believe I have done a 180 on the characters of Hilling and Daida just like that, but I have. How could you do this to me? How?
It's funny because I've been listening to the ANN After Show, their podcast, every week, and they've been talking exactly about this, about like, how does this show make me love all the characters? Oh no, it's going to make me love the villains next. I'm not ready for this. Oh no.
No. There will definitely be villains that they will definitely be making you hate. Like, I'm still like the like I'm Daida, not Daida, the king, I can't remember his name, it's on my head. Hesse. I kept getting the Hesse wrong, but what's this character all about? Why is he letting this happen? Why is he letting Miranjo do this to everybody? Just so many interesting things. And now, of course, it ends the first half with some trouble approaching the kingdom, and lots of trouble actually from the underworld, from the regular world. So things are gonna go down, but Boji's maybe strong enough to deal with this somehow. So I'm curious how those elements are going to go in the second half. And that will definitely one of the things that will carry me this winter season. That's for sure. But yeah, but I obviously can't like say it's like, we'll have to see how it ends. But it's definitely on track to be one of the best anime of the past couple years for sure.
We've finished Justin, and now we just have to talk about the weird news of 2021, and there was a lot.
And let's hope this does not take over an hour and 12 minutes to talk about, but who knows? We got a lot. We do have a lot of weird news. Some of it is like you kind of forget this actually happened, because this is a bit of... 2021 was a long year.
Yeah, 2021 definitely felt like 3 years at least.
Yeah. And I'm going to start, honestly, with one thing that ended up happening just recently. Just licensing Kawagai Jozu no Takagi, Teasing Master Takagi-san in season 3 is not a weird thing in total. Like, if you normally hear it without any context, you're like, okay, it's just one title I guess got licensed. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is this is a title of all anime titles that can be licensed by 3/4 different companies. Takagi-san would not be the one you think of, but it is. So season 1, which I was jokingly calling it Kawagai Jozu no Takagi-san, it was called that for the Crunchyroll version. Then season 2, Netflix took this. And then now season 3 is going to end the film. High Dive and Sentai will have this series. And Helen, I have only one person to blame. Okay, not one person, one brand, one company to blame. It is Netflix. Even I think when they announced they had season two, I had no idea why they brought it, why they got it. Absolutely no clue. But they did. They dubbed it. And now, just what, Helen, we're going to get three different dub versions of this work, of all anime. And I'm not disrespecting Sakaga-san. I did kind of want to catch up to this series. That might be one of my winter projects, to try to actually catch up and watch it. It's not a bad show from what I remember watching. Like, I watched season one a while ago. But, like, this show? Really? How can it be on four essentially different platforms of different seasons? This does not happen all that often. I think, obviously, the most famous one is in Current Show of Climb. But that technically is on one... That's on one service. But the problem is, I think it only has season one, no season two, then it has the next season. It's like, what? Why? Because licensing is a pain in the butt. That's what it is.
So, in things that were a pain in the butt for one company, so I think a lot of us online have heard about the MMORPG Final Fantasy XIV, which previously was free to play up until you reached like a certain level and I think a certain stage in the game, but they just had a new expansion come out in November. I think it was November. And it's been so popular that too many people were trying to get onto the servers. People were posting pictures of queues that were like a couple thousand people long just trying to log in after work. And so they actually said, okay, we don't have enough server space for everyone, so we're going to stop selling new copies right now, and we're going to have to just sort of like cancel the free trials at this point as well. And it's like, we just cannot handle this many people right now. I'm sorry. Which is very impressive. And then on New Year's Day, the CEO of Square Enix was sending out some letter talking about, I think, like their hopes and goals for 2022. And one thing they mentioned in there was NFTs. You know, we want to get into doing this. And all of the Final Fantasy XIV players I follow on Twitter were screaming, no, NFTs and crypto mining in general are the reasons why it's so hard to buy new computer parts right now or just like build new computers. Since I don't know about you, Justin, but my friend circle's always been like the people who are very big into like building their own PC gaming rigs. And just nobody's been able to do that for a couple of years, basically, because it's been so hard to get parts. And people were saying, no, because of this mining, it's been so hard for us to get that. And for, you know, companies to buy more servers so that they could have more server space for everyone trying to play the award-winning Final Fantasy MMORPG, yada, yada, yada. So, In the letter, it even said, even though a loud majority of our players have said they don't like this idea, we're going with it anyway, and stuff like that. It was... This letter itself should be weird news, because it was saying things like, most people play to have fun, but some people play for, like, participation, or, you know, to do a greater good or something, and it's like, sir, you make video games. These are leisure activities. If anyone wants to do, like, some sort of greater good for the world, they will volunteer for a nonprofit. Like, just please get out your ass.
Yeah, you know what I was going to say? The participation part is probably fine, but the greater good part raises so many eyebrows.
Like I said, I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it in there. But yeah, it was strange. And it's like, I don't know. I think some people participate to help others when they're like, you know, you're helping a newbie through a dungeon or something like that. Or, you know, you're giving advice to someone who's new. Like, I don't know. Whoever these NFT salespeople are real.
They're good. They're really good.
Yeah, they're really great at convincing all these people. Okay, no matter what all of your user base says, you should listen to us. Like, I'm still mad about Kickstarter. Kickstarter just doubling down and saying, yeah, we're going to get involved in blockchains and everything. And yes, folks, here I am interchangeably using blockchains, crypto, NFTs together because they are all based off of the same technology at its core, which is just going to literally set the world on fire.
Helen, we can't stop it. They literally remained... Sorry, let me make sure I say this right. They literally renamed the Staples Center in Los Angeles to crypto.com.
I saw people proposing that people should just refer to it as The Crypt, but that is too cool of a name for the team that plays there.
So yeah, it's the blockchain thing is not going away, Helen. It's just not. The only thing at this point is whether NFTs will go away.
We could have government regulations on this, but no. Just any spineless cowards need some shelter services.
Anyways, we have other weird news. This time I have another company, and they're like, wait, that's not us. So yeah, Shueisha.
I'd forgotten about this one. Because it was like at the very beginning of last year.
At the very start of 2021, Shueisha was apparently taking down a bunch of fan art from a lot of people. One Piece, Dragon Ball, even their own artists got taken down by Shueisha. Until somebody uncovered, it was not actually Shueisha that actually was taking everything down. It was someone that was using information to get that to make that happen.
Yeah, I think I saw someone online saying, you can tell this isn't actually them because the address they're giving, like, isn't, like, the actual address of their publishing offices. It's an address for, like, something else related in the phone book or something like that.
And apparently, all of this stems from I think this is correct. Let's see. Vertically used the same tentacle claims by way of correlating using a claim document. With a YouTuber with a similar moniker. I believe this was some sort of tiff with some other person.
Yeah, I think it was like a harassment campaign, and they were targeting other people as well to like try and cover their tracks.
Yeah, that was just... This was just bizarre. Like, I saw some people I follow had to lock their accounts because of this.
Yeah, people were warning each other, like, don't post these words or these fan arts right now.
And then it got so bad that Shueisha, the Japanese company themselves, had to literally make a statement, Manga Plus, saying that it has been falsely misrepresented by individuals sending in copyright claims and is currently investigating with social media platforms to decide on a course of action. So yeah, that was a wild start to 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Very wild.
So the Legend of the Galactic Heroes premium box set that Sentai put out in 2018, the one that had like all of the TV episodes, all of the OVAs, etc. Absolutely enormous chonker of a box. Sentai also wouldn't let you do it on layaway. You had to pay the whole $800 up front. They proudly announced they were limiting it to only 1,000 copies. And they finally announced this past May that they had sold out all 1,000 of those copies.
I wonder how they could have done it.
It seems like some people were taking that stimulus check and stimulating the economy.
they probably were really happy that they finally were able to sold it, because I'm like, you guys have so much of that in stock and it's not going anywhere because you have it priced so exorbitantly.
Well, remember, their warehouse of stuff is basically the right stuff warehouse of stuff, so... If you ever order anything from the Sentai sales, it just ships from the right house warehouses.
We're not going to be able to end this, have a weird news section without talking about Dick Fight Island, which did occur. Sublime decided to change the original title. I should have checked to see what the original title was, but it was definitely not Dick Fight Island.
I think
Island
it was like Eight Warriors or something like that. Like, this was good localization on their part.
Yes. Okay, here it is. Hachine no Senshi. So Eight Warriors, as Helen said. But yes, obviously that would not convey what's actually happening in this manga. So Sublime decided to change it. And one of the few times where somebody changes the localization of a name, and it works. Because this became the at one point it was the best-selling romance manga on Amazon. And yes, I saw that it had definitely sold out. You couldn't buy it anywhere. So yes, their campaign worked. They made lots of money. And who knows how Volume 2 will sell out. I think that's the final Volume 2. But we'll see how that goes. But yes, good on Sublime. Good on Sublime.
Although to be clear, in 2021, with like all of the printer woes, it has been a little easier than usual to just buy out a print run of stuff.
That is also true, yeah. Print woes also was an issue too.
And we did also have, you know, quite a few other titles, you know, making bestseller lists. Like manga continued to dominate, like the adult comics bestseller lists every month, and all of the ones by not manga, but the Chinese novels by MXTX, all three of those, which just came out in December, I think all three of those placed like
They're in the New York Times. Yeah. They're in the New York Times. Yeah.
Hell yeah. We got gay guys doing magic, making the New York Times bestseller list. Heck yeah.
You got gay guys in bookstores where people can actually go and get them. You have people talking about this, big campaigns, magical stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Honestly, I wouldn't put this in obviously weird news or anything like that, but that was the fact that they Seven Seas licensed that, and the response to that definitely was one of the biggest stories of the year.
Yeah, I would still love to know what their print run numbers were for these.
I don't think they were specific about this, but in their press release when they announced they had those three novels in the New York Times, they did announce that they did a 500,000 print run
for all three of them. Right.
That's the thing. It didn't clarify if it was all three. They just said 500,000 print one.
Yeah, and even if you split 500,000 by three, that'd be like 150,000 each, and that's enormous for this. Like,
there's three titles, there's three books. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, like we can sometimes see what the print run numbers are for stuff like My Hero Academia and everything, and I don't think it's 150,000.
Yeah.
I know it's gotten into big 5 digits. I just don't know if it's gone over into 6 digits.
I think it's gone more than that. Okay. Recent volumes that come out.
This is just trying to print a whole bunch at once because it's going to take forever to reprint.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hella, that... Well, they've actually been reprinting that series a lot.
Well, I was going to say, who takes longer to reprint things this year, Viz or Seven Seas? Because both of them are fighting for that ranking in my mind.
I'm pretty sure Viz is the least one to worry about. You have Kodansha, you have Yen Press, Seven Seas. We're not even going to talk about... We can't even really put Denpa in this because it's not really fair.
Yeah, Denpa is a 3-person organization that was just getting started before the pandemic. Really, like, they are exempted from these complaints.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head worse, but they have... I would just say all the companies had a tough time. I would just say that. For sure.
So, let's see. Oh, God, yes, this one again. So we've got Representative Paul Gosar of Arizona, who, for some reason, he, one of his staff members, somebody in his office, doesn't exactly matter who exactly it was, decided we're going to take the Attack on Titan opening song and we're going to, you know, use it to convey something about, like, anti-immigration stances. Here's the thing, it's like... If you know who all the characters are in Attack on Titan and what sides they're on, then the messaging gets pretty muddled. But it did also include things of like superimposing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's face on top of some of the Titans. So then, you know, the characters are like jumping and trying to kill the Titans. And so, yeah, the entire fucking country knows about this now. And he has been formally censored in the House, which is actually kind of hard to get people to agree to do. I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, oh, God, I'm going to have to explain to my mom what Attack on Titan is so she can explain to her class, and she teaches, like, 9 political science classes. And then I remembered, oh, wait, I haven't seen any episodes of this, but my stepsister once showed my mom and my stepdad the first episode of Attack on Titan. So my mom knows what this is. Oh, great. I don't have to do it this time.
Popular enough for everybody to know.
I mean, to reiterate, my anime origin story is that my stepdad... gave my mom a copy of Spirited Away to watch at home, and my brother and I came in on her watching it and kept watching.
That's a good way to start your anime watching, Helen. That is a good way.
Well, the full story is even fun here because he had heard that we were still watching Pokemon when we were like 14 and 12 and thought we were too old for that. And also at the time, he was just my mom's coworker, and it's like, and so usually I get to end that story with, and now he's my stepdad. But yeah, so that happened. I think that's most of the American politics we have in this list. Definitely not all of the politics we have on this
list. Definitely
not
all. Definitely not all. There was definitely some I was considering putting on here, but I'm like, I think we got plenty of weird news to talk about. And I guess in terms of 2021, it's not enough compared to everything else, so too bad. Rare that we get too many plagiarism accusations in anime. Granted, you would think because of how similar some things are, maybe it would happen often. But no, there are just enough differences to where it's not quite plagiarism. But for Studio Kai...
Yes, it's the one you're thinking of, guys. We're going to talk about at the very end.
But Studio Kai, they're the ones who did that great adaptation, the great past season of Uma Musume. Made lots of money in Japan on that. I know they did. I've seen so many...
The second season?
The second season sold so much. So much. So, yeah, definitely transform that franchise. Because remember, they had that original PA Works version. It was okay. It was not great, like totally great or anything like that. It was solid. But didn't, like, blow up or anything like that. Then they decided to... It was supposed to be a mobile game. In fact, I heard that the mobile game was not possibly not going to happen. But then they held off. I think they did the second season of the Umayun shorts. Then into season two. Then the mobile came out. Boom. Just totally exploded in Japan.
Yeah, honestly, I kind of want to watch the second season, even though I never saw the first, because it sounds like it was good.
The second season, you know what? The second season is in my top 10 of... If I made a top 10 list of anime, it is in my top 10. Very good.
But we're not here to talk about Umamusume.
Yes, we are not. But yes. The verdict, because the fact, I want to acknowledge that Studio Kai is kind of a newer company, but they have some established stuff. So they took over season two of Seven Seas from another studio. And while they did that, they apparently recreated an ending sequence that was so similar to the one in Beyond the Boundary that they had to change it. Yeah, it sounds like a rookie mistake, and then B, not good look. Not a good look, guys. Just simply not a good look. You cannot be copying off of that. And the fact that somebody took the time to notice that and realize, oh yeah, these are similar, does not speak well to you guys. It's not. So let's hope you do not do anything like that ever again. Please continue to make good anime. Just do that.
And then, but that's not the worst things that anime productions did this season. Oh no. Not season, year. There was... I'm going to have to get the name of this right, because this was some weird little thing that flew under the radar until they did this.
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah, so... It was a short anime called Machine to Heart, which was... shorts, I don't know. It's the kind of thing that's interesting.
It's planned to be like a variety show topic that was supposed to be like part of a variety show.
Yeah, but apparently... One of the ways they decided to fund the show was making the voice cast buy DVDs out of pocket. So those who were successfully, accepted into the role were asked to buy like 50 DVDs costing $36 each, or there's another number here of like $1,800. Coming out to $1,800 total. So yeah, like. Guys, that should not be a part of your funding plan. Part of our funding plan is that we are going to make people pay to be in the show. And so, that was canceled. Once people found out about that, that was canceled.
Yeah, I think, what was it? What was it I going to say? I think one of the...
I think, TV like, the TV station or something found out about it and was like, yeah, no.
Yeah. Just like, screw you. Goodbye. Whoever that production company is going to shame you into never actually doing any anime ever again. Also, a rare thing that happens is manga getting canceled after one chapter. It doesn't happen often. Maybe you get canceled after you actually do like a full arc, but that's normal cancellation. That's like, okay, you did your story, it didn't really hit with the readers, canceled. For the Kakegurui writer to do an isekai revenge manga, have it canceled after one chapter, something definitely went wrong. And what went wrong is literally most of the characters, or maybe all the characters, look like characters from other isekai series. You have one guy definitely looks like Kirito. One person looks like Rimuru from that time I got reincarnated as a slime. Like, it's almost blatant how you have an overlord-looking character in here, but it's in there. I think there's even a Katarina lookalike in there. And I'm wondering what the first thing that came out of nobody's... I'm surprised one of the things that did not come out of his mouth was like, hey, can we make sure we adjust this so that it's not quite plagiarism? Or at least not so close to characters like from popular series? And apparently that never came up, because they were obviously brain dead enough to let this run. And so was Kadokawa. I think it was Kadokawa, right? Yep, this is a Kadokawa. It's a monthly Dragon Age Kadokawa magazine. And apparently whoever the editor was for that one did not seem to note that, and once they released a chapter and people complained about that. Definitely isekai fans are salty about that. I can definitely see that. But at the same time, looking at these designs, I'm just like, yeah, I don't think this is gonna work. This is not gonna work. Sorry guys. So yeah, that got canceled after one chapter.
Yeah, I mean, like, Japan doesn't even have like creative usage rights and stuff like that, but this seemed like a straight-up parody. Like, the point of the parody was using characters that people already recognize from other series. So just... yeah, I'm just kind of surprised this one got to one chapter and someone did not stop them beforehand. And speaking of things that got canceled awfully quickly, it sure seemed like Netflix was hyping up the Cowboy Bebop show, the live-action adaptation, quite a bit. But then, like, they put it out, and Netflix was saying, oh yeah, this is one of our best-viewed shows. Of course, none of us can ever see Netflix's numbers, so who knows what that means. Just don't believe them. But then a month later, they were like, yeah, we're not going to do anymore. And usually when Netflix cancels shows, it waits, like, a little longer, just so people stop thinking about it. You know, they can just sort of slide it under the rug. But by announcing it only a month after they did the show...
was it a month?
Kind of gave them more publicity and kind of made it more obvious. And was like, lots of strange choices all around there.
This is really... it really got canceled in a month?
Yeah, I think it was just a month.
Wow. I didn't realize that. Jeez.
Actually, yeah, I'm looking at the date. The ANN article for the cancellation was December 9th. And I think it aired like November 16th or so.
Not even a month.
I think it was either the weekend of, like, November 11th or 19th. I forget which one. But, yeah, it was only a month.
It's barely even a month. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, in normal, like, situations, it wouldn't quite be... well, I mean, I guess in general, it could be still, like, standard weird news. But what puts it over the top is just the history behind Cowboy Bebop. There's been so much talk about a live-action version of this. Feels like since my high school days.
Oh yeah, because we were all saying forever, yeah, this is a show that would probably work well as a live action adaptation. And this one just, I didn't watch it since the trailers I saw and all the chatter I was hearing about it just made it sound kind of flat, like it was focusing on kind of generic things, you know, that the hour long format versus the 30 minute format wasn't really working. It was kind of inspired only by the original instead of the pastiche of things that made the original so engaging. And apparently we were all wrong, and Ed should not have been in the live-action version, because I saw that clip, and it's like, I understand what you were trying to do, and that was just... wait. Unfortunately, that was too much for live-action.
Did you actually watch the clip?
Yeah.
Actually, like, oh god.
Yeah, for Ed being in there, it's like, I understand what you guys were doing, and I respect that, however, just, ooh, hard cringe.
Yeah, I was good with the screenshots. That was good enough for me. So yes, we will definitely remember Cowboy Bebop. Netflix is taking Cowboy Bebop for the infamous adaptation of Cowboy Bebop.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely can't forget, obviously, Attack on Titan, very popular, known work. And
I mean, there's more anime coming out of it for like a week.
In fact,
the final season, part two.
I feel like putting that in weird news. The final season,
part two.
Wait, but where's it supposed to have it finished already? Why is it called fun? It's part two, darn it. You know, we gotta actually work on part two. You know, we gotta rest and stuff like that. Are you really resting, MAPPA? Are we sure about that? But okay, anyways. So everybody knows about Attack on Titan, but of course, obviously, certain places have restrictions on what you can depict. And for a Malaysian magazine, they had to do everything possible to meet their local guidelines. So they end up giving the Naked Titans pants.
It reminds me of sometimes you'll get, like, a superhero character who transforms, like Beast Boy, and people are always joking, oh yeah, how do their clothes always stay with them, you know? And I feel like this would be the question here of some of the Titans, you know? How does the Colossal Titan change, and his pants change with him?
It's like, I
or actually, given how Titans work, it's like, where did the pants come
from?
Yeah,
exactly. Like, you have to bite yourself and get blood out, and you have to basically take out blood and everything, and then all of a sudden you transform.
Yeah, because the Titans are kind of like a biomech, so it's like, where did the pants come from?
It's like, we already know, like, look, we had the Hulk, he's already wearing pants, we already get that. What about the Titans? How is it going to work in this? Will you censor it like this?
Let's see. Oh, and I totally forgot about this one. So it's a good thing Justin put this in the script. Tokyo Pop partnered with Cracker Barrel? Just put some of their manga in Cracker Barrel, and that was strange, you know? Nightmare, and it's Disney manga, specifically. And
with the Nightmare, was the Nightmare Before Christmas, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's definitely the picture in here. There's a version of the Cracker Barrel logo with that guy from the Nightmare Before Christmas. I never saw that movie. I don't know who this character is.
But yeah, that was bizarre.
Yeah. Let's see. Cheating has consequences. C. Wife auctioning off Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
You would think it does, right?
This feels like a post I would find under, like, the Reddit ships subforum or the Am I an Asshole, you know, subforum, you know? You know, someone, they were a fan of Yu-Gi-Oh, they bought the cards, their wife discovered them cheating, and so she put all the cards up for sale. And as of the article that I'm referencing's reporting, there were 765 bids for a total of $75,000, so...
That man lost. He lost.
Listen, folks, if you're in a committed relationship, you don't cheat. You talk things out like adults.
Yes, there are times where you have to talk like adults and you gotta have a divorce. Okay, that's just it. It is what it is.
But
just
you walk away with your Yu-Gi-Oh cards at that point.
Yes,
so.
Yes, you do walk away. Yes, that is the thing. You could have walked away with Yu-Gi-Oh cards if you just was an adult and talked it over. But no, you decided to cheat and look at the results. If there's anything we're gonna have to remember moving forward, is if we gotta somehow convince a production studio or production company to make Condom Battler Goro an actual anime. We got to know the lore, Helen. We got to know what this person looks like. Ash, a very buffed up Ash, what he does with the condom. We have to know.
I just can't get over that there's this web anime and it's, you know, Condom Battler Goro, and that in the anime, in this web anime, it's making references to, like, other fake nostalgic anime. Like, they've built up, like, their own alternate universe in there just for this.
Saying.
It's like, some folks have just gone to town doing the work, and I'm confused, and I hope you're getting paid enough for this.
I hope that whoever came up with the 10-page script that had to be condensed for just very short trailers gets paid so much money. So much. They were really into this. They were really into this. Hell, you could totally tell just by watching the trailer. And I have to respect that. I have to respect it.
And so, I mean, just like we've said before, we don't always understand what gets an anime and why. Just
You know what's funny? I thought I did.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I've definitely heard enough stories over the years. Like, God, there was the year one time that Nagahama was at Otakon, and a producer wanted to pay him back and asked him if there was any series he wanted to direct, and he's like, yeah, I'd love to direct an adaptation of Mushishi. And, like, a week later, the producer, like, had it in the bag, like, we're going to have a production of this manga now. So, like, the production committee situation is strange in Japan, but I don't think any of us were expecting a second season of The Devil is a Part-Timer 8 years later. Like, not only has it been 8 years, but that series is finished with, like, 17 volumes or something along those lines?
No, it's more than that. It's more than
that. It's even more than that, okay. You can tell I was not the one reviewing this on the site, but you can check out our reviews.
Yes, Chris Lee is reviewing it. But yes, the light novel finish is definitely over 20+, that's for sure. But yes, that's the thing. It ended, though.
Yeah, so it's still like, is this new season? It's like, are they going to kind of, like, skip a whole bunch of content and, like, get to, like, the ending of the light novel series? It's like, I just have a lot of questions since, you know, it's been so long, and it's like, well, I guess I have an excuse to go rewatch the original. I'm certainly happy. I'm just very confused.
I'm trying to figure out if I want to watch the original, because I felt like it lacked some things in the first season. And it was when I read the light novel a while ago, but I definitely enjoyed the light novel version more than the anime.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's been 8 years, and yet it's still really rare for us to get, like, a reverse isekai series. Yeah, and this one came out before Isekai was the hot new thing. Like, this one came before out in the era of, like, the magic high schools, I think.
Before we even called it Isekai.
Well, I'm sure some people did, but yeah, it wasn't common slang.
Definitely not. Unless it was in, like, one of those 4chan or Reddit forums, I had never heard of the term Isekai until, like, the past couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're on the subject of long times between actually working on stuff, Kazuya Mez, he's having a new work. It should be starting this month. I don't think they haven't announced the name of it yet, but it's gonna be his first new work in 26 years. This person basically retired. He was basically done.
So when this guy was last working, was Pokemon even out back then?
I don't even think Pokemon was even out when he started.
Because this would have been like the mid 90s.
maybe late 80s.
No, because
26 years.
30 years ago was 1991, Justin. Trust me, I'm very sure of this.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. But fine, early 90s. So yeah, it's a long time. But Pokemon was not even a thing at the time. So yes, that's actually kind of it's honestly, we have a lot of weird news in this session. It is actually cool weird news. Like, this is a guy that's
to be fair, a lot of this is cool weird news, but just weird.
Okay. How do I term this then? This is awesome weird news. How about that? Awesome weird news. Well, okay, some of this other stuff could be awesome weird news, but I'm trying to differentiate because kind of a known author, I think horror mangaka, deciding to do work. I think that's kind of notable. It's just that 26 years and now you want to start writing again? What is it? What type of work is it? Don't let it be an isekai. No! Stop! Unless you can really subvert it.
I mean, well, the way you're reacting to it, I think an isekai would be a horror in this point. Okay, and so yeah, we had a couple of other, like, long-awaited returns, or at least returns that came after a long while. There's another one from Mamoru, the Shadow Protector, and that manga is resuming after 6 years, which is weirder because, like, the manga got into the final arc of the light novels, which ended in 2008, and so then it's only got, like, a couple more chapters, and then the manga's probably going to be done, so it's like, what was going on there?
If you see my helpful notes,
your helpful note is bruh.
The article actually updated. This was not there when I last looked. It was not there. So it came back in September. Then they said it was going to do its final arc. Then it ended December 25th. So this series, the light novel was finished long ago. For some odd reason, they brought back in 2021. And then it ended in 2021. And my only question is, why? Why? What was the artist doing between 6 years? So what? 2015? 2016? Somewhere around there. Just what are they doing? What happened? And now you want to complete it and then just that's it? 3-4 chapters, that's it? That was kind of bizarre. That's just bizarre. Okay, but despite the fact that I did say that was bizarre, I really did set myself up for this. Despite that, the fact that an author listens to a fortune teller to end their manga series is also uniquely bizarre. So yeah, the manga ended as 11 volume, and then, what was it? I'm trying to make sure I get this right. It was either in the afterword, or maybe it was on Twitter. Where the creator, I'm not saying that name, I am just not doing it. She posted on Twitter that she ended the manga in 11 volume, and then she ended up consulting a trusted fortune teller who told her to end it at the 11th volume. And I'm just like, why? You say it's trusted, but like, if you were enjoying it, okay, the only way you end it is if you come up with a different manga that could be a worldwide hit. That's it. If you're not becoming a worldwide hit in the next 4 or 5 years, why would you end it? Why would you do this? That is just baffling to me. I am baffled.
Well, maybe that's what the fortune teller was doing. They were telling them, you should end this now because I have this idea for a new manga, which will be like a world-spanning hit and will make you tons of money.
Well, I hope the fortune teller is not the writer in this situation. I just hope that they just said, hey, you should end the volume. No, it has to be very vague. You should end the volume at 11 volume, and that's it. They didn't take anything else. The artist, the author decided to listen to them. Maybe there was a reason why. Comes up with a new idea, turns it to worldwide hit. That's it. Come back in like, what, 2026, 2027. We'll revisit it at that time. See what happens.
And speaking to coming back, so World's End Harem was supposed to be a fall show. It aired exactly one episode, and then the official website announced, okay, Episodes 2 and onwards are going to be delayed to 2022. Sorry. And Crunchyroll was slated to stream it, and it's like, okay, we're just gonna wait till 2022 at this point.
No, I think they were told they couldn't.
Yeah, it's like, okay, that's a real bad production schedule, guys.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what the heck happened. There was some speculating, is this an interview speech reviewer situation? Is it a case where, thus, the production schedule is actually bad? Many questions, but the fact is they were able to air one episode, and then all of a sudden they just couldn't do it anymore. That's weird. That does not happen. I can't remember this ever happening. Excuse me. I can't remember this ever happening in terms of, like, weekly scheduled anime. That's not to say there have been production issues that pop up. That definitely has happened in anime for sure. But to just be like one episode and nope, yeah, weird. Definitely weird. But yes, we cannot forget the weirdness of Anime Tube, which did happen, and it was so bizarre. Like, I was seeing tweets about it saying, like, okay, they seem like decent people, but they have a bad idea. But then all of a sudden, once their bad idea got exposed to more people, that's when they started to show they were not actually good people. So, Anime Tube basically tried to do their own service, be like, yeah, we're gonna have all this anime, all this stuff on our service. But the thing is, they never talked to anybody in Japan. So it's like, you're trying to basically be like illegal streaming site, basically. If you're not talking to the people who hold the copyrights, then yeah, that's an issue. So they didn't talk to them. They angered basically all of the U.S. publishers. Like, I know the Right Stuff Press, Sean Kleckner. He basically went after them because he was like, you didn't talk to me at all. What the heck? So, yeah, that happened. And needless to say, the Kickstarter, it was a Kickstarter or some, they're on some service. That ended up getting taken down. And since July 19th, they haven't tweeted anything. They have no more Facebook page. So it's likely possible, it is probable that we're not going to be hearing anything about AnimeTube ever again. I think that's pretty clear. They basically just screwed up in so many areas. Like, do you guys not realize this is a good time to actually start being legit? Like, people, like, we've seen the manga companies like Kaiten Books and Comkey, just what else? Lots of companies are just emerging over the past couple of years, all because I think people are now able to interact digitally more than ever before. Like, you don't have to immediately go to Japan anymore. So it's like, this is your chance to actually do something legit. And AnimeTube failed spectacularly. Like, it's just literally like one of those heaps of, like, it went down like a heap of flame. Just nobody's going to ever remember them. Okay, I take that back. There will be people that remember them. There will be. Just for it, they're just how hilariously they decide to go about everything.
Okay, let's see. We're almost to the end. Whew. Let's see. So, Crunchyroll and Funimation are back together again. I.e., Sony has bought Funimation, and then Sony also bought Crunchyroll. So we are now in the era of Funimation, I think.
Again. Sorry, again. Is it Crunchymation?
It's one of these. I think it's Funny Roll. I am told, apparently, that for the DVDs they put out, if you look on the spine, you can actually tell what kind of, like, who was, like, the head licensor and who was the sub-licensor by whose logo is on top of the other on the DVD spine.
Okay, but has this changed? I mean, has there even been, like, a new release from this?
Yeah, there haven't been any new releases yet. I think they're still in the legal, like, getting everything approved stage, but they've gotten through the first couple of stages, and I think that the U.S. Justice Office has decided, nope, we don't see a problem with more monopolies, we're going to let this go through, as all of us expected. But it is happening. I'm about it. Anyway.
Hmm? Wait, what?
I said I'm about it.
Well, I would have been more about it myself, but if only because AT&T was just so incompetent.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I'm just like, yeah, I can't really. It's one, like, I get the whole monopoly thing. I get it. It's just the fact that AT&T, I didn't put, I was AT&T and Weird News was there in a totally different realm from us, but AT&T is just so bad. Anime is like one of the biggest things right now. They don't have a single anime. Well, okay, I think they have some Ghibli stuff on HBO Max. But now I'm saying they even gave away HBO Max too. So it's just like, AT&T, what are you doing? How much debt are you in? But yeah, they AT&T had too many problems. So them selling Crunchyroll was, well, yeah, just a thing. So yeah, the Crunchyroll Funimation thing so far feels kind of, so when I go back to when they first did it, it felt different. Like the energy about them going to get being together was felt like it actually made sense, or at the time seemed like it was a more positive thing. At least for now, it doesn't quite feel the same. I don't know if you feel the same way, but does it feel like it's this new, the second go around feels like it's positive to you?
I don't even know anymore.
All right, but I guess, well, especially with new competition and everything, that probably impacts stuff. But yeah, we'll have to see how this new partnership or resuming partnership takes shape in 2022. So we'll follow that. So we managed to talk about isekai and NFTs in this whole episode, but now we're gonna put them all together and also bring in Otaku Coin. I think I was out when I saw this news pop up and just saw so many people was just like, anime just needs to end immediately. Because, so Otaku Coin announced the Anime Loot Project. So I can create an isekai anime with NFTs. This happened around September. And I have not heard a lick of this since then. So I have no idea if this is even happening. I obviously think it's not, because this is obviously not good. This obviously makes no sense. So obviously this will never work. Just this whole idea that you can use it. I think first of all, they're trying to use isekai like, hey, yes, this is the popular thing. People will definitely want to watch it and buy it. But you still have to have some sort of quality to it. There's got to be some sort of thing that will like people to buy it, like ReZero, Mushoku Tensei, Overlord. There's got to be something. So you just can't create an isekai anime. And attempt to do that in this way will never work. It just won't. Sorry to say this. So yeah, this probably died pretty fast. I mean, I don't obviously know, but nothing about this will work. Does it sound like it'll work? It definitely does not sound like it'll work. So no. The fact that this even happened is just too weird to really speak on this any further.
And now we have, I think, our final story. Dun, dun, dun. Well, first, the weird news was that the Tokyo Babylon anime was going to happen, which got announced in 2020, and just sort of felt like an encapsulation of 2020. You know, it was going to be made by Studio Gohans, yada, yada, yada. And then, let's see, at first it got delayed because of plagiarism. And then, in March, they straight up announced, we're having to cancel this because we did too much plagiarism. You know, once we actually knew, oh shit, people were looking out for this, we went back and discovered that, yeah, we'd left out a whole bunch of designs and such, you know? And so, yeah, not happening. And Clamp has said that they're trying to have a new adaptation of the story go on anyway, so it sounds like the idea of a new Tokyo Babylon anime is not completely dead, but definitely not happening at Gohan's.
And definitely won't be happening soon, I think.
Yeah, since it would take time to, you know, assemble new staff and everything. And it's funny, because Gohan's apparently has been doing this for a while. Like, I found a Twitter account that is just screenshots of stuff from Gohan's shows, like promotional stuff for K. And it's all just directly, basically, if not traced, then, you know, referenced within an inch of its life off of various magazine fashion ads. You know, they've been doing this for ages. But now, Gohan's is suing King Records, who canceled the deal, for 450 million yen, saying, hey, we did make those first 13 episodes. They have been delivered to you on time, etc., etc. You do need to pay us that part of the contract for work we already completed. which is fair. You should be paying people for doing the work, you know, even if there's going to be other fees involved for, you know, contract cancellations, etc. But what this really means is that on somebody's server somewhere, there are 13 episodes of a Gohan's produced Tokyo Babylon, and I never wanted to be a part of a heist more in my life right now. I just want to know what this looks like. Funny enough, when Clamp was saying recently, I think it was in like one of those Twitter spaces, that's where they were talking about how they're still moving forward with a new Tokyo Babylon project in some form. I think one of them said that they hadn't realized that making Seishiro skinnier was not going, was so important to so many fans. Since when they showed off those designs, like Seishiro in particular, he had like that very 90s Clamp physique with the big broad shoulders, the big nose, the big hair, etc. But he looked just twinkie in the Gohan's designs. And they were like, we didn't realize that was so important. And it's like, no, you have to understand that is part of the main appeal there. It is the hunkier guy with the small underage twink. That is part of the appeal for these shippers, you know, like that was just a fundamental miscalculation. But yeah, Justin, I really want to know what the fuck did these episodes end up looking like?
What they look like? Well, look, you only got to go by how the trailer looked. That's all you got.
I mean, I seem to recall the trailer was like super short and showed basically nothing, so.
Oh, it wasn't that long?
I don't think so. I'd have to look again, but that was not enough to satiate me. I need more. I need to know just how much of a train wreck we avoided.
Well, I mean, I don't think it was like as X-arm. Oh. You know what?
X-Arm, truly weirdest news of this year.
We didn't put this on the script, but it does kind of count as X-Arm. That did happen this year.
That did happen to the point where the manga kind of, like, quietly ended not long after. Like, the manga was just like, I am tired of this attention.
We don't know if that was the reason why, but the fact is, the manga wasn't, like... Like, it wasn't, like, crazy, like, it was popular
X-Arm's
enough.
X-Arm's credits were, like, crediting, like, an IT development company for some of their animation. Yeah, I mean,
there's just so much wrong with X-Arm. It's almost incredible. But I was just going to tie into, Tokyo Babylon did not get as much vitriol as X-Arm.
I think it's because that one did not actually end up coming out.
Yes.
Also, it probably would have been actually animated.
Yes, that is true. Actual competent people that knew what they were... First of all, that people...
No, I just meant there would be actual animation in there. It wouldn't be... We had to censor this kiss, because if we tried to show the two characters kissing, they only have one moving point on their jaws, so they would just be clipping into each other's faces. Like, we would have gotten more animation than that, at least.
Yes.
It was so sad, too, because when Tokyo Babylon got canceled, it felt like, oh, nature is healing, 2021 is going to be better. You know, we had hope in those first few months, and now it's just like, no.
Yeah, the Tokyo Babylon thing is just going to be, it's just so wild. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, we know every year there's, like, characters that either have the same personalities, or the same, like, kind of designs or stuff like that. But there are always enough differences that they're always not the same. But apparently, Gohan's plagiarized so much, King Records had to cancel the whole anime. It was that much. Gohan's, what are you doing? What did you do?
And again, it's so strange because, like, the manga has, like, a very distinctive fashion style. And, you know, it's been, like, 20 years since the end of the 90s, so 90s fashion's coming back into vogue again. It's like you had so much you could have used as a reference, but you just went off and used other stuff instead. And it's like, we've talked about plenty of shows on here which have been delayed for, you know, God knows how many reasons. But for a show to be straight up canceled before it airs, that only happens every couple of years. And especially the revelation of, we already made half the show. Like, usually... It either gets canceled before it comes to that point, or nobody ever hears about that because they don't have trouble getting paid for it. So yeah, guys, that was 2021.
Yes, and there will be no doubt there will definitely be some weird news of 2022. We'll see if anything... So this past year we had Tokyo Babylon. The prior year we had Interspecies Reviewers. What will be the biggest lock weird news story of 2022?
I mean, like I said, we've got that show airing in a couple of days where the staff are tweeting out things like, lol, we don't have an animation checker.
Okay, but look, Tokyo...
And we've also got World's End Harem that says it's going to start re-airing.
Okay. World's End Harem will definitely be on the list for sure. But we need something literally like so, like, preposterously weird and just so bizarre. Like, this, like, Tokyo Babylon 2021, bizarre.
You know,
totally.
We didn't even mention that, like, the second case of Omicron detected in the U.S. was at Anime NYC and just all of the national media coverage over that.
That would also count as weird news of 2021. That does, yeah, you know what? Sure. That will also be included. Out of all the things that could have happened for a convention.
Didn't you say that, like, your mom or something, someone had to talk with you? honey, are you sure?
They had to call me. They had to talk to me about the whole thing. And I'm like, this is not happened. But the thing is, we're in an environment where it's just like, okay, cases are definitely happening and people are, like, stuff is opening up. It was going to happen. It just happened to be an anime con.
Oh, yeah. I have definitely woken up at 6:30 in the morning, not even gotten out of my pajamas, just threw a face mask on and walked over to CVS to, like, get, like, their last COVID testing thing because I knew they were restocking overnight. Like, this is the era we live in now.
Right. So, yeah, we're in an era where this is just going to happen. It just happened that an anime convention happened to be the very first known case of the new virus. That's really what it's come to. So it is weird. I will say that. It was weird. But, like, in terms of the general stuff, when we talk about anime and manga, Tokyo Babylon, weird. Interspecies Rue is weird. What in 2022 will be that type of level? So you mentioned Worlds and Harem. That definitely be on the list. Tokyo Q24 Award, definitely be watching it for sure to see if it'll be on this list. But it's definitely gonna be something that's gonna emerge. It's just gonna blow minds and wonder how the heck did it even get to this point and be the lock of the weird news of 2022.
But anyway, Justin, this podcast has gone for 2 hours now. I have well run out of my cup of water. Let's wrap this up.
I
still
need to eat dinner. I literally went from work to talk to you for 2 hours about anime and weird news.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time we call, we're going to talk about more anime, aren't we?
Yep. Well, we're taking a couple of weeks off. We're not going to be back till the end of January, where we will start talking about the winter season, which both of us have looked at the chart and it's not seen a lot to interest us. So hopefully that episode, well, at least hopefully for that episode, we won't spend an hour and 12 minutes just talking about the winter season.
Well, the problem is we'll be catching up with all the other news that
we won't spend an hour and 12 minutes specifically on just the winter anime. That's what I meant.
Fair enough. So until then, you can catch us on Twitter you catch me on Twitter at @Kami_Nomi. You can also follow the OSG on Twitter at @TheOSG. You can check out the OSG.com for reviews, features, potential interviews, lots of stuff, lots of news. Hopefully in 2022, we'll be able to do some more things involving news, interviews, and reviews. So look out for that.
And of course, you can read my reviews here on the OASG. You can find my increasingly random shitposts over on Twitter at Wandering Dreamer. And you can find the other podcast I co-host on Twitter at Manga in Your Ears. I'm also going to be on the Taiku Podcast's end of year, everyone's top 5 anime episode. We have scheduled a 4-hour block on an upcoming Sunday to do recording for. Please pray for me. And as in years past, I am sure that if anyone is interested, you could write out your own top 5 anime list of the past year and send it over to @TaikuPodcast on Twitter. The more random, the more we'll laugh when we read it on air. So do it. Do it all. Until next time then, folks. Bye.
See everybody later.